Venue Radio Network.
Hey!
Oh, are you listening?
When you find yourself in danger, when you're threatened by a stranger, when it looks like you will take a licking, there is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call
OTR Rob.
There is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you this fall.
OTR Rob.
And now, here is OTR Rob.
Hey, everyone, this is OTR Rob welcoming you to another day in sunny Northern California. Yes, I know I'm rubbing it in, and I know that some of you back east are getting the storms that we had out here last week. And I used to live in the east for a long time, so I know how hard the winters can be back there, and even some of the early summers back there with the threats of, you know, typhoons and hurricanes and all that stuff like that there, and including tornadoes. So I know that dark skies back in the east are not good news. I've been through that a lot, so I feel for you. I know where you're going. I know what you're experiencing. So my heart goes out to you. But just to let you know that I'm here to kind of brighten your day with Richard Diamond, Private Detective. From March 9th, 1951, The Butcher Shop, and The Adventures of Rocky Jordan from February 26th, 1950, The Return of Dr. Peru, and Barry Craig, Confidential Investigator, from 1952, February 6th, Diary of Death. So I hope you enjoy all those and maybe feel a little bit better about the weather. I know what you're going through, and I can relate. Definitely I can. So enjoy all this, and I'll see you all back here next week, God willing, and the crease don't rise any more than they have.
The makers of Camel Cigarettes present Dick Powell as Richard Diamond, Private Detective. Cigarette has Camel's rich, full flavor, the flavor of Camel's costly tobaccos.
And no other cigarette gives you this proof of mildness. In a coast-to-coast test of hundreds of people who smoked only Camels for 30 days, noted throat specialists reported not one single case of throat irritation due to smoking Camels. Make a note. Think of your throat. Try Camels. Transcribed is Richard Diamond, Private Detective, starring Dick Powell.
Now, in my business, I run into a lot of people, make a few friends, and a lot of enemies. I remember a few weeks ago when one of those friends walked all the way over from 31st Street to tell me about his trouble and leave me a share of it. His name is Angelino Giuseppe, and he runs a butcher shop. Little guy with a big, broad stomach and a smile to match. I met him when I was on the force. Used to stop in and buy some cold cuts or a pound of bacon. I liked his smile, and I always hung around for one of his bad jokes. But when he came into my office that afternoon, pushing his big stomach in front of him, I spotted trouble right away. The smile was gone. Well, well, Angelino.
Hello, Mr. Diamond.
Haven't seen you in a long time. Come stai?
Sto male.
Yeah, I can tell. Oh, what's the trouble? The pig's knuckles got arthritis?
picture now.
That's better now. That's more like my answer.
You always a kidding. You make it easy to smile.
Yeah. Accetti.
Grazie. Grazie.
All right, Angie, let's have it. What's wrong?
Well, I'm going to ask you to do something, but I can't pay you.
We'll talk about it later.
You can take it out in a trade.
That'll run into a lot of ham hocks, Angelino.
But I want to pay you.
Well, I can always throw a barbecue. Now tell me about it.
Well, you see, it's like this. I come to you as a sort of a representative from all the other butcher shops, the independent ones.
I see.
I ain't the only one that's worried, so all the butchers got together last night and decided to do something about it.
All of the independent butcher shops?
That's right. Every week, a couple of guys come around and collect. Now, if we don't pay, we get our shops bust up, and if that ain't enough, we get our heads bust too. Look, see? I still got 3 stitches right here in the top of my head.
Oh, I see. That's a nice job. Doctor must have used a loom.
I got this last week when these 2 guys came for the money. I couldn't pay, so one of them hit me with a blackjack.
Oh, that's too bad. What about the law, Angelino? That'd give you the right kind of protection.
Well, we discussed that at the meeting, but we decided it was too dangerous. We've been warned. If we go to the police, we get hurt too bad. Well, we all got families, Mr. Diamond. We can't take the chance.
Now, have the 2 men who beat you up been back?
No, but they will be.
Okay, let's go.
Well, we're going someplace?
Yep, we are going someplace. You don't know it, Angie, but you just hired yourself a new assistant.
I have?
You certainly have. Come on, I want you to show me how to carve a lox. Well, that's what happens when your reputation gets around the butcher shops. I'd been telling Angelino what a great detective I was for the past 10 years, but I should have known he'd never take my word for it, so I had to prove it. We went out, grabbed a cab, and 15 minutes later, I was standing behind the butcher shop counter. Angelino handed me a white apron.
I don't get it. Why you want to be a butcher?
Angie, you want me to get a line on these guys who do the collecting, don't you?
Why, sure.
Well, I can only think of 2 ways. I could watch them and not look suspicious. Make like a butcher, or crawl in with the ground round.
Crawl in.
Think of what would happen if someone looked down for the price of ground round and caught it staring back at them.
It's Callista, that's so funny.
Oh, now, come on, Angie, it wasn't that funny.
Well, make customer.
Nothing like learning firsthand. Let me handle the sale.
Well, you think you can?
Sure. Here she comes.
Oh, good morning, Mrs. Hennessy.
Oh, good morning, Mr. Angelino. Well, business must be good. I see you have a new butcher.
Oh, yes. This Mr.
Hangtooth.
Mr. Hangtooth.
Hangtooth?
Good morning, Mrs. Hennessy. Is something I can do for you?
Oh, yes. How much is the lamb shoulder today?
Which one?
What?
Look, maybe you better let me...
Relax, Angie. I'll make it. Which shoulder would you like, Mrs. Hennessy?
Is there a difference, young man?
Oh, yes. You see, this lamb here is really a ram.
A ram?
That's right. Hurt his shoulder playing against the Cardinals last season. We're also selling his shoulder pads at 21 cents a pound.
Mr. Angelino...
You'll find him hanging in the back with the spare ribs. Now, Mrs. Hennessy, if you can tell me which shoulder you want, I'll wrap it up and send it off tackle between the liver and the...
Well, I never...
Of course you haven't. That's the trouble with you people. Here's a nice little ram that played his heart out. And oh, by the way, the heart is special today, 11 cents a pound. Angie.
She's gone, huh?
Like laundry in a tornado.
But what do you want to do that for, Mr. Diamond? She was one of my best customers.
I wanted to get her out of here. I wanted to get her out in a hurry. Just as she came in, I spotted 2 guys heading this way. When they saw her, they backed off. Look, they're standing across the street right now.
Where?
Right over there. You see them? In front of the drugstore.
Yeah. That's them.
It is?
They're the ones that hit me. They're the ones that come around collecting.
Well, they're coming again. You better duck. I'll take care of it.
Well, listen, please, you be careful. They're pretty rough monkeys.
Go on, Angie, and beat it. They're almost here.
All right. I'll be in the back.
Okay. A mile can a cigarette be? Make the camel 30-day test, and you... Well, good morning, gentlemen. What can I do for you?
Hey, where's Angelino?
Oh, well, he's out buying some old buffalo. I'm the new assistant.
Buffalo?
Shut up. Well, tell me, new assistant, when'll he be back?
Well, it's hard to say, gentlemen. These buffalo are in Wyoming.
Oh, yeah? Carl, I think this guy's trying to be funny.
You, my friend, wend yourself a lamb chop. How'll you have it, with or without the bloomers?
Hey, you know something, Red? I think you're right. Hey, what's your name, laughing boy?
Hangtooth.
Hangtooth?
Oh, I'm going to have more fun with that. Close everybody.
Well, look, Hangtooth, you know who we are?
How many guesses?
You won't need even one. We're in a hurry. We're collectors.
Oh, well, we put all the scraps out and back in a can. You can't miss it.
I don't like you.
Well, I have a friend. Maybe we could double date.
Look, let's stop the clowning. If Angelina didn't tell you about us, it's going to be too bad for you. We're here for some money. We get every week $25.
Yeah, last week Angelino didn't have it, so he accidentally hit his head. We figured that all that blood would make him remember it this week.
Well, I'm sorry, friend, but Angie didn't say anything about it. Tell me, what does he pay you boys for?
Oh, little things. Protection, mostly. You see, if he paid us last week, he wouldn't have hit his head.
You know something? I know a big, fat cop who would just love to hear all about this protection Angie's paying you for.
You do, huh?
Yeah, I do, huh?
Well, look, seeing as how you're a new boy around here, maybe we ought to tell you first.
Why don't you do that?
Yeah, let's go in the back.
I like it here. I listen better.
Oh, you do, huh?
Is that all you guys can say? Now get out from behind that counter.
I want to explain the thing to you.
Yeah. Go on, Red. Explain it to Mr. Hangtooth.
Hangtooth.
You'll have to partner me. Don't hear so well. How's your hearing, Hangtooth?
Depends on what I'm listening to.
Well, listen to this real good. Seeing as how you're working for Angelino, you're going to need protection, too. So let's have the $25.
I want to know what I'm buying.
Oh, sure.
Hey, hit him this time. Hey, a rough one.
Yeah, you're bleeding.
Yeah. Want to get rough, huh? Hangtooth.
Hey, you're liable to kill him.
Yeah.
Let him alone. Hey, we better get out of here.
Yeah. We'll come back for Angelino later.
Well, you really can't blame brave little old me for going to sleep at that point. One, I could have handled. But in that cramped space behind the counter, with both of them coming from different directions, I had to give it up sooner or later. And I did for about 20 minutes. When I finally snapped out of it, I looked up and saw three heads staring down at me. Two herring with Angelino in the middle.
Mr. Diamond, you're right.
Oh, lovely.
Here, let me help you get up.
Swell. Now, look for my eyes, will you, Angie?
I didn't know what to do. I guess I should have called the police.
Oh, fine time to tell me. Let me sit down.
When I thought about calling the police, I also thought about my family. Those two men might beat up my family just like this.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
Mr. Diamond, please, you better forget about this. It's too dangerous. When they come back, I'll pay them the money and nobody gets hurt.
Look, Angie, I can understand why you're scared. Those two headhunters aren't kidding, but you can't let them get away with it.
I can and I will. I ain't taking no more chances. First they bust up my shop, then they bust up me, and now you. No thanks. I got enough.
Okay, Angie, but not me.
What are you going to do?
Well, I got a sore face and a nasty disposition. I won't get back to normal until I find those two guys and tie their necks in a bow. I left Angelino's shop and headed for the 5th Precinct Police Station. I wanted to look up two sure bets for the police gallery. One named Carl and the other Red. Two guys who went around scaring poor little businessmen like Angelino. By the time I reached the station, the aches from the beating were making me very unhappy. And when I walked into the squad room, I spotted something that didn't make things any better.
Yeah, what are you... Holy cow, Diamond.
Well, Sergeant Otis, I'm glad you noticed. Means I put myself together all right.
What happened to you?
Don't be silly. I always bleed just before lunch.
Well, how did it happen?
It wasn't easy. Is the lieutenant in?
Sure, go ahead.
Well, thanks. Say, Otis, when are you going to start shaving in the morning?
Why? What's wrong?
Your 5 o'clock shadow is 4 hours fast.
Oh.
How are you, Walt?
Wow. What hit you?
Where'd the bruises show up? I come on in Technicolor.
Someone sure did a good job.
Yeah. That someone is two guys, Walt. One named Red and the other Carl.
Red and Carl.
Yeah. I got closest to Red. Name matches the hair, busted nose, about 190, very nasty with a sap.
And Carl?
Dark, greasy, well-dressed if you like the type. Big boy with a scar under his right eye. I gave Walt the complete descriptions and briefed him on what had happened in Angelino's shop. We went down to the mug file and started going through pictures. 20 minutes and 8 dozen charming photographs later, I found what I was looking for. I showed them to Walt, and he said, "Now, you know him?"
Yeah, Carl Tate and Red Dillon. Here's the package. 12 arrests, 6 convictions between them.
Very impressive.
Couple of muscle men. What do they go after you for?
I've been pulling a protection racket on some of the independent butcher shops. Who do they work for?
He used to work for Jack Arno before he got sent up.
I know they're not working this setup alone. It's too big.
No, they wouldn't be. Hey, Tiny Easter's in town.
Tiny Easter? Oh, used to be Arno's right-hand boy.
That's right. Came in about a month ago. I'd love to get something on him. Nobody's ever been able to nail him.
Well, it adds up. Easter worked for Arno, and so did Carl Tate and Red Dillon.
Well, we can't pick him up just because two of his boys worked you over. He'd just say they weren't his boys.
I don't want him picked up. I want Carl and Red. If Easter goes along with the deal, you can have him.
What are you going to do?
Get cleaned up and pay Mr. Tiny Easter a visit. What's his address?
He's got an office on East 48th Street, 804.
Thanks, Walt.
Tiny's a bad boy.
I'll take along my .38 just in case I have to spank him. I left Walt, went back to my office, took a clean shirt out of the closet, washed up. Locked up again, went down to the street. I grabbed a cab, and 20 minutes later, I was standing in the reception room of Tiny Easter's office. A big guy with a bulge under his arm was trying to be as unreceptive as possible.
So you want to see Easter? You have an appointment?
No, I haven't got an appointment. Now tell Easter I'm out here.
What's your name?
Oh, you're going to get hung up on this.
What do you mean?
The name's Hangtooth.
What?
I see. Now make like an office boy and tell Easter I got a message for him from Carl and Red.
You're a pretty fresh guy, aren't you?
Yeah, and I'm going to spoil if I have to stand around much longer.
You can spoil rotten for all I care. You're not going to see Easter. He's busy.
Okay. You know, you get so excited, you'll ruin your stomach someday.
Oh, I don't think so.
You don't, huh? Skeptic.
What are you on?
I'm collecting scalps.
How'd you get by, Lefty?
He's tied up with a stomach ache, swallowed a fist.
Okay, so you got muscles. Also, you got a pushed-in face. Lefty do that?
Carl Tate and his blood brother, Red.
Oh? What you come to me for?
They're working for you, aren't they?
You smell like a cop.
Name's Hangtooth.
I doubt it.
Good for you. I'd hate to go through that again. I'm a private cop.
Well, now, good for you.
I was in a butcher shop when your two boys wandered in and started playing squash with me. I don't like to get pushed around, Easter, and I don't like your racket. I want Carl and Red, and if I get you along with them, the state will hang a medal on me.
Looks like you got nothing to lose.
Don't look at it any way you like. Now, what about your two playmates?
I don't know what you're talking about, Shamus. Never heard of those two guys.
I don't think you understand, Tiny. I'm pretty mad. I'm going to find these two guys, and I'm going to do it even if I have to be unpleasant with you.
Just what do you mean by unpleasant, Mr. Hangtooth?
You break a leg, that's unpleasant. Ow! Don't try to pull a gun on me.
You busted my hand. Take your foot off.
Drop the gun in the drawer. Okay.
My hand's busted.
Now take the hand out, empty.
Oh.
Now, let me explain it again. If you go out and shoot 12 people tomorrow, I'm going to be sore about it. But when you start intimidating a bunch of hard-working little guys and their families, I go off like a skyrocket. And then when a couple of your cheap gunsels push me around, I explode.
I tell you, I don't know these guys.
Oh!
Look, Easter, please believe me.
I don't know them.
You worked with them in Chicago.
Ah!
I'm telling you the truth, Easter. I'll work you over till you look like an eggplant in a subway.
Look, whatever your name is, I got boys. They'll take care of you.
Who's going to tell them to do it?
I am.
With your jaw broken?
Oh!
Now, where do I find Carl and Red?
Oh, you knock all my teeth loose.
I got 31 to go. I guess you really don't understand.
Yes, I understand. Oh.
Now, where are they? You still need some encouragement?
No. In the warehouse by the 14th Street docks.
What warehouse?
Rogers and Sons. Big sign on the top.
You mind if I use your phone?
Go ahead.
Don't you know it's not polite to listen, Easter?
Well, what do you want me to do?
Go to sleep.
No!
Before we continue with Richard Diamond, here are a few words about smoking enjoyment.
More people smoke Camels than any other cigarette.
That's right. More people smoke Camels than any other cigarette.
Behind Camel's great popularity are the two things that mean steady smoking enjoyment: flavor and mildness.
No other cigarette has the rich, full flavor of Camel's costly tobaccos. Tobaccos that are properly aged and expertly blended.
And no other cigarette gives you this proof of mildness. In a coast-to-coast test of hundreds of people who smoked only Camels for 30 days, noted throat specialists reported not one single case of throat irritation due to smoking Camels.
Make your own Camel 30-day test, the sensible test, based not on a puff or a sniff, but on day-in, day-out smoking. You'll see how flavorful Camels are and how well Camels get along with your throat, pack after pack.
How mild,
how mild,
how mild,
how mild,
how mild can a cigarette be? Make the Camel 30-day test and you'll see.
Smoke Camels and see.
And now back to Richard Diamond, Private Detective, starring Dick Powell.
I put in a call to Walt and told him what had happened. He said he'd send a couple of men down to pick up Easter and agreed to meet me at the warehouse. It was getting late in the afternoon when my cab pulled up near the river and I got out. The cold breeze was kicking up little patches of white on the water, and the light fog was moving in from the Atlantic as I started down toward a big building with a sign on the top that read, Rogers and Sons Importing. The place was boarded up, but a window in the basement showed signs of recent use, so I jimmied it open and dropped down on the dark, cold pavement. I held my breath and listened. The place was as quiet as a tomb, so I moved across the room until I found a flight of stairs and went up to the main floor. I opened a door and listened again.
It sure is getting cold in here.
Yeah.
How long are we going to have to stay here?
Till Easter tells us to leave. Now relax.
It was Carl and Red, all right. They were somewhere in the warehouse, so I kept on my toes and moved as quietly as possible toward the voices.
You want to play some cards or something?
Yeah, it's okay with me.
I don't know why we got to hide out like this.
Because Easter said to, that's why. We got to stay cool till he finds out about that guy we worked over this morning.
Hagtooth?
Yeah. Might have been a cop.
So what? We were cops over before. I'm cold.
Look, just deal the cards. Yeah? What? He did, huh? Hey, what's the matter? Boss! Hey!
What's the matter?
I don't know. That was Easter. The guy we worked over was in his office, tied him up. He got loose, but the guy's headed down here.
Hagtooth?
Yeah. Just as Easter was going to say what to do, sound like he got in a fight.
The cops?
Yeah. I think we better get out of here.
Afternoon, boy.
Huh? Hagtooth.
Hangtooth. Come back here, Carl.
Help me.
You shouldn't have pulled a gun, Red.
Since
when do you butchers carry rods?
Since we get pushed around by guys like you.
You're the doctor. I'm shot mad.
I can't take it back. The law will be here in a minute.
You're a lousy butcher. I hope Carl pays you good.
I'll see that he gets the chance to try. I left Red lying on his face and ran toward the front of the building. The only way out was that window in the back, and Carl was sure to be hiding somewhere in the dark, hoping to get around me and head for the basement. There were a dozen places to hide in that warehouse, but I had one advantage. He couldn't see me any better than I could see him. I stopped and listened. Come on, Carl. Red's hurt pretty bad, and the law's on the way. You gotta get me before you can get out of here. Carl! Come on, Carl, give it up. You're stuck and you know it. Carl! I had his position pretty well spotted. By his gun flashes, I could tell he was edging his way toward another large pile of packing cases. I moved off to my left, still keeping his approximate position in line with my gun barrel. It was my idea to circle him, but something changed my mind. A metal ladder stretched down from the ceiling and led up to a catwalk overhead. I went up, one rung at a time, half turned to keep Carl in line in case he made a break. After what seemed like hours, I reached the catwalk and started crawling on my hands and knees toward Carl's position. I was nearly over him when I heard the door open.
Rick! Lieutenant? Yeah? Here's one of them. He's shot up pretty bad. Rick! Come on, Otis. Maybe he's up that way.
I couldn't answer him, and he was heading right for Carl. I kept looking down, hoping Carl would show himself. Walt got nearer, and I held my breath. Just then, Carl stepped out and aimed his gun at him. I beat him to it.
Lieutenant, shut up.
It's okay, Walt. I got him.
Where are you?
I'm up here on the... Oh.
There he is up there. Rick. Good grief.
Yeah, good grief. Get Otis out of here, will you?
What's so funny, Lieutenant?
If you knew Otis, you could rib Diamond for the rest of his life.
Yeah?
Walt.
Come on, tell me what it is.
Walt?
Okay. Get out of here, Otis.
Oh, Lieutenant.
You heard him, Otis. Now beat it.
Yeah, go on, Otis.
Oh, gee, Lieutenant, won't you even...
No, he won't. Now you beat it. It's real funny, isn't it?
It sure is.
I just saved your life and you stand down there and you... Oh.
Well, don't look down.
Get the fire department.
Don't you ever think about these things before you start climbing ladders?
Well, it was the only way I could get in a position to shoot. I just didn't think.
For a guy who can't stand high places.
Walt...
Well, it's your own fault.
Fault, Smalt. Get me down. I'm getting dizzy.
It's only about 50 feet to the floor.
Walt!
Great big boy like you.
If you don't get the fire department...
Okay.
Oh, you big fat ox. I hate you.
Dick Powell will return in just a minute. According to a repeated nationwide survey, more doctors smoke Camels than any other cigarette. Again, doctors in every branch of medicine, doctors in all parts of the country have been asked what cigarette they smoke. Again, the brand name most was Camel. Friends, make the sensible cigarette test. Smoke only Camels for 30 days, and you'll see why so many people say, once a Camel smoker... Always a Camel smoker.
And remember, your best buy is Camels by the carton.
How mild,
how mild,
how mild,
how mild,
how mild can a cigarette be? Take the Camel 30-day test and you'll see.
Smoke Camels and see.
Here's Dick Powell with a special message.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, many men who have served valiantly in our armed forces are hospitalized. And as a tribute, the makers of Camels send them gift cigarettes to hospitals in the country and overseas. This week's Camels go to Veterans Hospitals, Dallas, Texas, and Phoenix, Arizona, U.S. Naval Hospital, Pensacola, Florida, and to all hospitals operated by the European Command of the U.S. Army. Now, until next week, enjoy Camels. I always do.
Seen starring in the RKO film Cry Danger. Tonight's adventure of Richard Diamond was written by Blake Edwards with music by Frank Worth. Our director is Helen Mack. Featured in the cast were Virginia Gregg, Wilms Herbert, and Arthur Q. Bryan.
Men, whether you buy the handy pocket tin or the big 1 pound tin of Prince Albert, you're in for real smoking joy. PA's Choice Tobacco has a rich taste and delightful natural aroma. It's specially treated to ensure against tongue bite. And it's crimp cut for smooth, even, cool smoking. Get Prince Albert, the National Joy Smoke, America's largest selling smoking tobacco.
Next week for another exciting transcribed adventure of Richard Diamond, starring Dick Powell.
Who listens to radio? Only 150 million people. That's all.
Hey, everyone. I just thought I would step in here real quick to have you notice that the very beginning of this episode, you have an announcer coming in trying to get in 10 seconds worth of a network promotion. In the days of live radio, having to jump in right in the middle before the show even starts while they're getting ready to roll it, and he's trying to get out all of the shows that have been and are going to be throughout the night, and this is a Sunday night, the most popular night on radio ever, and he's really poring over that script really well and really fast, and he's pretty excited about it. He has to be. He only had 10 seconds to get out the message. But this is what old radio was all about long before any of us were ever born. Kind of unique to kind of get this kind of insight of what went on during network radio. So anyway, enjoy the show.
It's been Jack Benny, Amos and Andy, Bergen and McCarthy. Still waiting to entertain you on CBS are Rocky Jordan, Horace Hite, R. Miss Brooks, The Whistler, and Red Skelton. Now, Del Monte Foods brings you a world of adventure with Rocky Jordan.
The Near East Import Company, cabby, for Shariatulak Pasha.
Yes, Effendi, I know the place.
Oh, a little short on fares today, driver. I saw you parked out in front of my cafe most of the day.
Such is the manner of the taxicab business, Effendi. Some days, many passengers. Other days, few.
Hey, weren't you supposed to have taken a left turn on the corner we just passed?
This other way, sir, we shall miss much of the city traffic.
Well, I hope you know what you're doing. Hey, you don't. Left turn, not right. You're going away from Tulak Pasha.
So I am. Jordan Day.
Hey, what is this?
You shall see in but a moment.
Put on the brakes, cabby. I'm getting out. Break it up, I said.
I point the cab in the direction of that cement wall in the bend in the road. I pull the throttle so the gas may be fed automatically. And I'm going to jump out of the cab and leave you here.
The door!
Shove in the throttle.
My door, it will not open.
Break, break!
The wall! We are headed right for it!
Break, you fool!
Del Monte, the brand you trust for flavor in so many good foods. Yes, Del Monte, the best-liked brand of canned fruits and vegetables in the whole wide world, takes you now to the Café Tambourine for another adventure with Rocky Jordan. The Café Tambourine in Cairo, gateway to the ancient East, where modern adventure and intrigue unfold against a backdrop of antiquity. Tonight's Rocky Jordan story, The Return of Dr. Pyrou.
It had started when I'd climbed into a cab to head for Sharia Tulak Pasha. But the cab driver had other ideas. He'd pointed the taxi toward a cement wall and pulled the hand throttle. His plan was simple and direct. Jump from the speeding car and leave me behind to get pressed. Only something went wrong. The cab door hadn't come open and neither one of us was able to get out. I woke up in a Cairo hospital, and it wasn't long before I had a visitor. Captain Sam Sabaya, Cairo Police. I lost no time in telling him what had happened.
Why should Joseph Salim, the cab driver, wish to kill you?
I don't know, Sam.
Had you had any dealings with Salim previous to this incident?
No, I'd never even seen him before.
Then tell me, why should a man you have never seen wish to kill you in such a manner?
I don't know, but he did. You don't believe me?
I did not say I do not believe you.
All right, then. Put me in close touch with Salim. I'll get an answer for you.
That is impossible. You were protected by the front seat. Salim sat directly behind the steering wheel. He's dead.
Captain Sabaya.
Hmm? Oh, yes, nurse.
There's a telephone call for you from a man named Mr. Lundigan.
Oh, yes, yes, Lundigan. Well, I must go.
Salim could have been hired by someone, Sam.
That is possible.
That means there'll be another try.
If what you have said to me is true.
Well, it is. And I'm not going to sit around and wait for anything.
Jordan, if your life is in danger, the matter will be ably handled by the police.
And in the meantime, what am I supposed to do?
One suggestion, Jordan, is that you stay right where you are, in the hospital bed.
It was a bad suggestion. Something was real cockeyed, and lying flat on my back in a hospital bed was getting nothing done. I found my clothes and climbed into them. That's when the nurse walked in and said I couldn't go. I said, yes, I could. She went for the doctor, and I went for the back door. 20 minutes later, I hauled my bandaged side and shoulder and slightly mutilated face into the tambourine. Chris had kept the place open.
How you feeling, Rock?
Oh, a little shaky. How's business?
Couldn't be better. Every time something happens to you, business spurts. You got a great system. Say, Rock, here's something sort of wacky. A special delivery letter came yesterday. I opened the envelope because I figured it might be important. All I found inside was this card.
Let me see.
There's nothing on it, just the name. Dr. Pyrou.
Pyrou? Where's the envelope this came in?
It's around here someplace. Here.
Mailed in Cairo, no return address.
What's all the excitement? It's just a little calling card.
Chris, that cab smash-up wasn't an accident. The driver was hired to kill me.
Huh? Why, who? Hey, who is this Dr. Pyrou?
Someone I knew in Istanbul.
A friend?
No, he wouldn't say so. I was going into a business deal with a Frenchman named Dubois. Pyrou was his doctor. Suddenly, Dubois was out of money and our business deal fell through. Next thing, Dubois was dead and I'd seen too much.
What do you mean?
Dr. Pyrou was up for murder and I was a witness against him. The only witness.
So he screamed revenge, huh?
That's right.
And now he's back. Hey, where you going, Rock?
Research on Joseph Salim. Well, the city directory showed a Joseph Salim on 175 Sharia 3rd Dynasty. It was after 8 when I stood in front of a rooming house old enough to give the termites indigestion. Sitting on the steps, a shawl over her head, was a Muslim woman with damp eyes and a big handkerchief. I asked her if she knew Joseph Salim.
Oh, it was a most glorious funeral. At the head of the procession came old Farqua, pounding the cymbal till the building shook. Then came the 3 hired mourners, with most lustrous voices. Their wailing and whining could be heard for blocks.
Yes, I've
through
heard.
The Musky Bazaar went the procession. Crash went the cymbal. Wail went the mourners. And the chickens and goats scatter helter and skelter into the square. Oh, it was a most glorious funeral.
Now, can we get back to Salim? Is there anyone here who knew him well?
Well, there is his sister who came from Alexander last week. Come, I will take you to her. Anna? Anna Salim?
Yes, what is it?
There is a man here inquiring of your brother Joseph. I say there is a man here inquiring of your brother Joseph.
Let him come in.
Yes?
My name is Rocky Jordan.
Oh. Oh, yes, you are the one who was in the cab Joseph drove. I am happy you were not killed, as was Joseph.
So am I, but that's not the end of it.
What is it you mean, Mr. Jordan?
I mean that someone hired your brother to kill me.
That is rather a strong accusation, sir.
And I'll find a way to back it up. But I'm not interested in your brother. He's out of reach. I am interested in the person who hired him.
Of course.
I think maybe you know something about it, like who he is.
Mr. Jordan, I cannot condone what my brother has done.
You do know something, then. Who hired him?
Well, a few evenings ago, Joseph had a visitor. I was asked to leave the room while they discussed something of great importance.
And what was the visitor's name?
I do not know. It was not said, but Joseph referred to him as Doctor.
Haru? What did he look like?
Small man, very small. Fat, round face with a smile. A smile without good feeling behind it. He wore a hearing aid. I remember it quite clearly. Also, he impressed me as the kind of man you would not want to touch.
Well, you've given a perfect description of Dr. Pyrou. Thanks a lot, Miss Salim.
I hope I have been of some help.
Oh, yes, you have. But what you've told me confuses me even more. I headed straight for the public library. It took me a little while to find what I was looking for. Copies of the Istanbul newspapers dated 4 years ago, December. The letters were big and black, telling the story of Dr. Pyrou's murder trial, with me as witness against him. But they told even more. They told that what was happening now was utterly impossible. Screaming headlines dated December 31st, 1945, said Dr. Pyrou, executed for murder. Oh, Chris, I'm tired. I'm going to hit the sack. Lock up in an hour or so and go home, huh?
Sure, Rock. But don't you want me to bunk here tonight?
No, it's not necessary.
Rock, look out the window.
What?
That guy under the lamppost up the block. He's been there all evening.
Watch job?
That's right. Maybe I better stay here tonight. If there's some trouble...
If there is, it's my trouble. I don't want you in on it. I'll lock up and go home, like I say.
Where are you going now?
Just behind the counter here. My sleeping companion for the night. All loaded up. Just in case, Chris. Just in case. Well, I went upstairs, shoved the gun under the pillow, undressed, and got into bed. It was hard sleeping. The effects of the smash-up hadn't worn off, and the whole business of Dr. Pyrou made it worse. I tossed and turned and felt like I was building a fever, and finally dropped off into a fitful sleep. Time went by, and the dreams came and went. The screwy dreams of illness and confusion. Dreams of the cab smash-up, of Anna Salim's description of the man who hired a brother. Wacky dreams, contorted dreams, of Pyrou and the hangman's gallows and the springing of the trap. And then the screwiest dream of all, Dr. Pyrou rising from the dead. And suddenly I was awake, and what I was seeing wasn't a dream at all. Standing over my bed in the low glare of a street lamp was a face, a round, fat face with a sickly smile, the face of Dr. Pyrou. I sprang up in bed, and that's when I was aware he was holding something in my arm. I looked down. A hypodermic needle, and he was pushing the plunger. I yanked my arm away, shoved it under the pillow, and came up with a gun. The figure bolted and ran. I raised the gun and squeezed at the trigger. Then I hit a lot of air. Then I scrambled out of bed to take chase. Only suddenly my legs were papier-mâché. I crumbled in a chair. Blackness dove in, and it was the end of the world.
Del Monte, Mahi Foods is presenting tonight's adventure with Rocky Jordan. You know, if things keep up the way they're going with television and everything, one of these days I'll just be able to hold a bottle of Del Monte catsup up to the microphone here and let it talk for itself.
Why, Larry, the flavor of Del Monte catsup does speak for itself right now. Just that rich, tempting tang tells you that it's made from the finest vine-ripened tomatoes.
Sure enough, and the taste-tempting flavor of all those delicious spices lets you know that Del Monte really has the know-how when it comes to blending piquant spices with tomato flavor to make a real zippy, zesty catsup.
There's a special secret, too, about that lively flavor. You see, Del Monte catsup is made with pineapple vinegar.
And Del Monte is the only catsup made with pineapple vinegar, the superb vinegar that brings out so much flavor from the other ingredients, especially tomato flavor. Yes, you're bound to hear good things about Del Monte catsup. So speak up for flavor yourself, friends. Ask for Del Monte catsup next time. And now we take you back to Cairo and tonight's Rocky Jordan story, The Return of Dr. Pyru.
It got off to a running start when a cabbie tried to grind me into a cement wall. And it ended when a guy who was supposed to be dead, Dr. Pyru, stood over my bed in the middle of the night shoving a hypodermic needle into my arm. Before I could grab him, the stuff went to work and I dove into blackness. It was early morning when I came to, my head as heavy as a bride's biscuit. What was it, I asked myself? Bad dream or the real article? Then I had an answer. Lying on the floor was something that told me it wasn't a dream at all. A hypodermic needle, still half full. That's when the phone began jumping, and I picked it up.
Mr. Jordan, this is Anna Salim.
Yes, what is it, Anna?
I am sorry to wake you so early, but I have something important to tell you. That man, the man who hired my brother.
Dr. Pyru, what about him?
I have seen him again.
Where?
In the marketplace, not far from where I live. I thought you would like to know.
Well, for a dead guy, he sure gets around. Thanks, Anna. I dressed and left the tambourine to head for Sam Sabaya's office to show him the hypo. Maybe that'd make him believe somebody wasn't kidding. Going up the street, I spotted the guy who was watching the tambourine the night before, a tan trench coat thrown around his body. He was still interested in me. All right, I led him to the police station and went inside. Sam wasn't in yet, but he was expected, so I decided to wait. Trenchcoat was standing across the street waiting for me to come out. I could see him through the window. Then, a moment later, I saw something else of interest. On Sam's desk, a folder with my name on it. I threw it open and began reading at the papers inside.
I trust you find that matter interesting reading, Jordan.
You sure had me fooled, Sam. You've been working on that cab smash-up all along. This folder's got a whole account. One, the cab didn't even belong to the Cairo Cab Company. It was a ringer.
That is correct, Jordan.
And two, there was a special lock arrangement on the door, so the driver wouldn't be able to get out.
Proving his killing wasn't a mistake, but a design by the person who hired him to prevent him from ever talking.
Why did you play it like you were sloughing it off?
Because I did not want you to take police business upon yourself.
It's my life, Sam.
Because of the unusual nature of this entire affair, Jordan, I insist that you leave the matter completely in my hands.
And what do I do? Stand by like a clay pigeon?
Measures are being taken to protect you.
All right, do something about the guy who's been tagging me. He's standing across the street
now. He is an agent of this department whose job it is to protect you.
Yeah? He fell asleep last night. I found this hypo needle in my arm. A sweet little character by the name of Dr. Pyru was at the other end of it. You may have heard of him.
Yes, I have. He's dead.
Yeah, that's what the Istanbul papers say. Executed for murder, December 31st, 1945. Only I saw him last night.
I have checked the matter with the Istanbul police. The body has been exhumed. The teeth marks have been checked and rechecked and checked again. Dr. Pyru is dead and has been buried for the past 4 years in the police cemetery in Istanbul, Turkey. Now, do you understand what I mean when I say the unusual nature of this entire affair?
I still saw him last night, and Anna Salim saw him. How do you explain that?
I cannot explain it. All I can say is that there is no question Pyru is dead. And yet, you are not the only one having trouble with this revisitation of Dr. Pyru.
Who else?
I am not at liberty to say.
Okay, Sam. I'll be moving along now.
Where is it that you are going now, Jordan?
Take a guess, Sam. It's free. I left the station, walked to a corner drugstore, and found a phone book. There was a small notation, doodle type, on the report I'd seen on Sam's desk. It spelled out a name, Basil Londigan. I remember that Londigan had put in an urgent call to Sam while he'd been visiting me at the hospital. So it all made me think Londigan was having pyro trouble, too. I found the address and rode over there to find out. The doorbell brought a heavy-set man with thick glasses.
Yes?
Mr. Londigan?
No. I'm Mr. Londigan's nurse. Is he expecting you?
Oh, he'll see me. Tell him it's all about a fellow named Pyru.
Won't you come in, please?
He led me through the main part of the house, through a pair of French doors to the garden entrance. Then he told me to wait, and he walked off. I heard the low buzz of a conversation between him and someone else. Then he came back for me and brought me over to Londigan.
Stanley, you may leave us now.
Yes, Mr. Londigan.
Who are you?
Name is Jordan. Rocky Jordan.
Never heard of you. What is it you want?
There are a lot of impossible things going on. I want some answers. I think we can help each other.
And what makes you think I need any help?
If Pyru was once your doctor, you do. Was he?
What do you know of Pyru?
I know he was the kind of a doctor who traveled in important circles, found out a lot of dirt, then threw it back into the faces of his patients, the blackmail way.
I see.
With one, he even tried on murder. But let's get back to blackmail. How were you with your indiscretion?
You are blunt, aren't you?
Oh, you'll forgive it, I know. You see, someone's just after your money, but they're after my life. True or false, you're being blackmailed by Pyru?
Yes.
Have you seen Pyru?
No. Captain Sabaya assures me he's dead.
How can a dead man blackmail you?
I don't know.
How can he be dead when I saw him last night?
I don't know.
Didn't you say anything else?
Just that the matter is in the hands of the police. I know very little about it, except that it's completely bewildering.
Okay, thanks, Mr. Lonergan.
You wish to be shown out, Mr. Jordan?
How do you know my name, Stanley?
I heard you mention it to Mr. Londigan.
How long have you been with Mr. Londigan, Stanley?
He's been with me ever since I've been confined to this thing. What does that matter?
Stanley still hasn't said how long.
5 years.
Uh-huh. Pyru's only supposed to be dead for 4. Who recommended you, Stanley?
Well, it was Dr. Pyru, Mr. Jordan.
What is it you're suggesting, Jordan?
Oh, nothing. Just looking for an opening. Want to show me out now, Stanley? You look pretty anxious. And he was. He gave me a fast walk to the front door, and a few moments later, I was out on the street walking south, trying to figure a way to get more dope on Stanley and Londigan. Trenchcoat must have gone off duty, because following me now is an Arab in burnous, headdress, and lots of whiskers. Protection from Sam. It was comforting, but all the attention I was getting made me feel like a long-legged blonde with the Navy in town. He kept following me as I kept walking, and I soon forgot him. I shouldn't have. When I turned down a deserted street, the Arab in burnous began to act real strange for an Arab, and especially for a policeman. From under his robes, he'd whipped out a gun and started throwing bullets. I dived into the gutter behind some garbage cans, and the shot began to come. I was out of breath, and he was out of bullets. He turned the corner and bolted. I moved out after him. By the time I got to the corner, he was also out of sight. That's a swell way to give me protection, Sam.
I am sorry, Jordan. The man I assigned to follow and protect you is completely trustworthy.
But an Arab in burnous got to him and laid him out in an alley, I bet. Then just took his place following me. My guard was down.
I admit the mistake, and the excuse is feeble. You might have been killed. Your death would have been on my hands. Do you think I want that?
Oh, I'm sorry, Sam. Guess I'm a little edgy.
Oh, it is all right, Jordan. Anger comes to our voices when consternation is in our hearts. It is just that I am not able to make head or tails out of this entire affair. There is an answer, but what?
Sam, I know how to bring this to a head. You want it?
That, Jordan, depends entirely upon the method you wish to use.
Pyru, or whatever it is, wants me dead pretty bad.
Jordan, a moment, please. It might occur to you to set yourself up as bait in some public place, say, and wait until this whatever it is comes to you in a further attempt at your life. This, Jordan, I cannot sanction. My job is to protect you.
Okay, Sam, forget I mentioned it.
Where are you going now?
Out.
Jordan!
Don't worry, Sam. Do I ever do anything you don't want me to? I went back to the tambourine, got my gun, and stuffed it into my pocket. Then I headed over to Old Cairo, to Miss Salim's part of town, to the marketplace where she said she'd seen Peru. It was closing in on evening when I found a rat's nest that passed as a bar. Inside, a tall, slim, why fellas get tired of mother type girl was doing a sword dance. I moved through the smoke, found a corner table, and sat down. I told the waiter two things. One, what I wanted to drink. Two, that my name was Rocky Jordan and I wanted to see Piru. He'd do the rest, and all that was left for me was the wait. Well, it was a long wait, but there were diversions. As the night dragged on, the dances got better, the music got faster, and the smoke got thicker. Then at 9, the dervishes came on the dance floor, turning themselves into a whirling, twisting mass, spinning tops, jet-propelled. Then at the height of their dance, suddenly standing in the doorway, through the heavy smoke, I saw it once again, the impossible, the face of Dr. Piru. Then it was gone. I moved out of the cafe fast, out into the cold night air, to see where the figure had gone. This time it wasn't getting away from me.
Mr. Jordan! Mr. Jordan!
Anna! What?
I saw him. I saw him again. Down those steps he went into that cellar.
My gun was in my hand. I took the steps two at a time and plunged into the semi-darkness of the cellar. At the end of a long hallway, I thought I heard a door close. So I moved to it in high gear and kicked it in. Inside, a single candle burned. Then I saw it once again, leering down at me, the face of Dr. Piru. I didn't wait another second before I pulled the trigger. The bullets plowed into the forehead, but the smile didn't leave the face. Then I knew why. It was a lifelike rubber mask, and I had a lot of answers. But I also knew I'd allowed myself to walk into a trap.
In just a moment, Rocky Jordan returns to conclude tonight's story. Maybe you've heard the saying, start off each day with a smile and the world will seem much brighter. Well, one grand way to help that smile get started is to drink a glass of that tangy, fresh-tasting Del Monte tomato juice.
That's right, Larry. Even Monday looks good around our house when we start off with such sunny, refreshing, ripe tomato flavor.
That goes for thousands of other people, too. After all, who wouldn't cheer up to a tomato juice that's really fresh-tasting, with all the rich, delicious goodness of plump red tomatoes?
Well, that's describing Del Monte tomato juice to a T. You can tell straight off that it's the juice of fully vine-ripened tomatoes.
Sure enough, otherwise it just couldn't have that tempting tang and that special flavor. And Del Monte's close quality control sees to it that the juice gets to you as truly natural-tasting and fresh-tasting as can be.
Well, isn't that just what you'd expect from Del Monte? If anybody knows how to protect flavor, they do.
So you see, Del Monte tomato juice means brighter breakfasts, refreshing appetizers, a grand between-meal drink, too. Better get several cans at your grocer's. Back now to Rocky Jordan for the conclusion of tonight's story.
Well, I had chased what I thought was the figure of Dr. Piru into a cellar. What I found there was a rubber mask of his face, a burning candle, and something else. The knowledge that I'd allowed myself to walk into a trap.
You may sit there and rest now, Mr. Jordan. You appear tired.
Anna Salim. But I guess the real name is something else, huh?
Anna Piru.
Daughter?
Yes.
Well, you got a first-class bringing up. Papa taught you a lot of things.
Mostly the practical ones.
You hired Joseph Salim to kill me, and when that backfired, you stuck around play-acting as his sister from Alexandria. What about the Arab who threw those bullets at me?
No Arab at all. A friend of the Piru family for many years. Come in here, Basha!
Yes, Miss Piru.
Turn on the light and meet Mr. Jordan, Basha, the man you did not kill. But you will still have another chance.
Well, it's all out on the table now, Anna. Revenge against me, but not without showing Piru's face. That helps the blackmail scheme, making it seem like Piru's alive. Papa had a lot of dirt on a lot of important people, Londigan included.
And it is filed, Mr. Jordan, on microfilm.
So that became your legacy. How does it feel to fall heir to a lot of blackmail material?
Quite secure. It is not taxable. Basha, Mr. Jordan is now all yours.
My pleasure, Miss Pyro. Will the knife do?
Oh, yes. Most admirably.
The big hulk moved toward me. I wasn't real anxious to have that cell in my graveyard, so I moved forward a couple of steps, getting a firmer grip on the empty gun I held. It was me and my empty gun against 6'4" Basha and 6 inches of blade, and it wasn't fair.
You will not get away this time, Jordan.
He took 2 quick steps toward me, and I raised the gun to slam it into his face. But I'd taken my eyes off Anna Piru. She moved forward with a burning candle and drove the flame into my gun hand, and the little bit of protection I had fell to the floor.
Now, Basha, your knife, and end it all for Jordan. Pig!
Stop! Stop, Basha, before you fire!
It was Sam Sabaya standing in the doorway with a gun in his hand, and he threw a great big damper on Anna Piru's plans.
Surrounded by police, it would be unwise for either of you to attempt to escape. Are you all right, Jordan?
Oh, yeah, sure, Sam.
Sergeant Greco, take these two. Go on, outside with you. Well, Jordan.
I'll give you a statement as soon as you want, Sam. I got it all.
There's no longer any hurry, Jordan.
There's some microfilm hidden someplace with a lot of blackmail stuff on it.
Yeah, we'll probably find it in Anna's effects. We will burn it, Jordan. Well, it is a good thing I understand you as well as I do. That plan of yours for setting yourself up as bait, though I disapproved, and perhaps especially because I disapproved, you would not forego going through with it.
It's a good thing I understand you, Sam.
How so?
You said you were going to protect me. I counted on it. I never knew you to fall down on your job yet.
For the finest in tomato flavor, enjoy the whole family of Del Monte tomato products.
Del Monte catsup and chili sauce, Del Monte tomato sauce and tomato juice, and Del Monte whole peeled tomatoes.
Remember, buy wisely. Buy for flavor. Buy Del Monte. Del Monte, the brand you trust for flavor in so many good foods. Rocky Jordan, written by Gomer Kuhl and Larry Roman, stars Jack Moyles in the title role with Jane Avello as Sam Sabaya, and is produced and directed by Cliff Howell, with original music composed and directed by Richard Arant. Remember, you have a date next week at the Cafe Tambourine, run by Rocky Jordan. Same time, same station. And the story is The Secret of Wong Lee. Butter tender kernels, real corn patch flavor, sweet as country cream. That's Del Monte corn. Whether it's golden whole kernel or golden cream style, it's the best tasting corn you ever ate. Del Monte corn. Larry Thor speaking. Rocky Jordan is presented over CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System. William Gargan stars as Barry Craig, confidential investigator.
There's an old-school motto with a modern twist, folks. An empty barrel makes a fine casket.
The National Broadcasting Company presents William Gargan in another transcribed drama of mystery and adventure with America's number one detective, Barry Craig, confidential investigator.
Barry Craig speaking. Manhattan Island's my beat. From Battery Place uptown to Spite and Dilo. I've got my footprints on every inch of sidewalk, a memory in every mile. Get used to a beat and it's like home to you. You're an island native, and only a pretty fancy fee can drag you even across the river to Brooklyn or three other boroughs. To drag you out of town needs a major earthquake or an act of Congress. So how come I find myself 40 miles from Broadway in an incorporated village called Seneca on the trail of a claw murderer? A nice little gent with side whiskers like Abraham Lincoln coaxed me into it. Town Supervisor Samuels, he called himself. His pitch went something like this.
I came straight to you from Lieutenant Trav Rogers of your Metropolitan Police, Mr. Craig.
Yeah, Lieutenant Rogers phoned me. You just left his office. No dice, old man. Seneca's off my beat.
But it's a situation of desperate emergency.
What's the population of your village, Samuels?
300.
A killer can't lose himself in that smaller crowd.
But then...
Order every townsman to line up in the public square. Then go up and down the line. When you see a wild gleam, nab him.
A wild gleam?
The guy you're looking for is a lunatic, first class. The claw used in the killing shows that. One nut in a neighborly crowd, your sheriff can't be that helpless.
He is. Berkey's only honorary sheriff. His business is farm tools and tractors.
Who's your regular sheriff?
We have nobody. Crime in Seneca's a rare thing. Don't even have a jail.
Pass the hat and build yourself one. Crime's here to stay, people say.
The board of supervisors empowered me to supersede Berkey, to contract outside help. Someone experienced in homicide. You were highly recommended.
By Trav Rogers. The lieutenant's having his joke.
Please, Mr. Craig.
You're a nice town supervisor, and you look like a tintype of an old favorite uncle of mine. I'd like to help you, but, no amount of pleading. No power on earth. Not 50 claw killings can entice me 40 miles from New York. In Seneca, flanked by Samuels and the sometime sheriff, I got a look at the corpse. The morgue was the back row of a taxpayer divided into a grain, oats, and seed shop and mortuary parlor.
This was Dr. Tyler, Mr. Craig.
A doctor, huh?
Horse doctor.
Oh, Sam Dave at Dobbin. Pretty thorough job of annihilation.
Shocking crime.
The claw marks on the skull were made by a garden tool, looks like.
Yeah.
Did Doc Tyler have any enemies? Let the sheriff answer, Samuels.
Why, no. Not to my knowledge, he didn't. Doc Tyler was a pillar in the community, a fine, respected
Save
man.
Save the eulogy for the funeral services, huh? Theft, then. Was anything stolen?
No, I'll have to say no to that. All Tyler had was accounts receivable. Bills owing him for his doctoring work.
You went over his property, then?
I did. The robbery was my notion, too, at first. I ordered an inventory of everything Tyler owned, right down to the horse pills.
And nothing was missing?
Nothing of any account, no. Except for old Baldy, everything was right where it belonged.
Except for old Baldy, you say?
Old Baldy's an old iron paperweight, the American Eagle. Doc Tyler always had it on his desk on top of a pile of papers.
And old Baldy was missing?
Yes, we couldn't find hide nor hair of it. Well, either somebody borrowed it and planned to keep it now that Tyler's gone, or Tyler threw it out.
Or the murderer clawed Tyler to get it.
Why would anybody want to commit murder for a worthless old paperweight?
Can't say. But that's why I'm in this whistle stop, to find out why.
And that brings us down to cases. You and me.
Come again?
Your being here. Samuels brought you out against me.
Against you?
No, Sheriff.
Shut up, Samuels. This is between me and Craig. Against me, I said, Craig.
Oh, I get it. Your pride's hurt, huh, Sheriff?
When you've jackassed around a while and Samuels admits to being the finicky fool he is, I'm marching you to the railroad station.
With a brass band and local school mom doubling as drum majorette. A big goodbye to a conquering hero, Sheriff, because my parting gift to Seneca is your claw murderer in person. Want a bet? I found overnight accommodations at a Miss Pringle's split seconds before a storm broke. Miss Pringle was a spinster who looked it, and a fluffy white poodle who looked as if he was eating himself into his grave to escape Miss Pringle.
This is Fluff, Mr. Craig.
Fluff, huh? Does he bark?
Seldom. Fluff has chronic laryngitis.
Oh.
Dr. Tyler, peace to him, was treating Fluff.
Sad about Dr. Tyler.
You're here to find the fiend?
I'm here to get a night's sleep.
Very well. You can have the attic room.
Why so high a climb?
I'm not accustomed to taking male lodgers.
Enough said. Blankets, towels, is everything there?
Oh, yes, yes, the room is ready.
And a wall outlet so I can plug in and shave?
No, the electric wires don't extend to the attic.
Oh.
There's a kerosene lamp. Now, if you go to your room...
You're pushing me, Miss Pringle.
But I'm not accustomed to men in my parlor.
Enough said. I'll see you in my dream.
Oh, my.
Good night, Miss Pringle. There were things I wasn't accustomed to, like attics, like figuring out how to light kerosene lamps, or like having the roof suddenly cave in on my head. I went down from a sneak blow. Club, the weapon felt like. I went down, but not out. I could see through a red haze like a film of blood, and I could hear glass breaking somewhere in the room. I rolled on the floor, not to be a sitting duck for a second blow. But no second blow came. Just quiet and the rain outside. The rain blowing in from an open window. The window my sneak opponent had used getting in and out. I went out the window after him. Outside, just at the edge of Miss Pringle's driveway, I ran into a reasonable facsimile of King Kong. A guy who looked as if he should be swinging from trees. Sitting behind the wheel of an open convertible, its top down. Working the car starter and getting nowhere. Having trouble, friend?
It's slow. Don't want to go.
The wires are wet.
I'm driving good and then it stops.
Your wires are wet.
Driving good, and then it stops, and then it won't go.
You're getting all tangled up in your IQ, friend. Doesn't the top go up?
Yeah, easy. This button here, you push it.
So push it.
No.
You've got a medium-sized lake around you. Floodwaters rising from the floorboard.
I'm not pushing no button. I like it like this.
How did you happen to stall?
I told you I'm driving good.
Well, then it stops, and then it won't go.
Making fun of me.
No. Did we meet a while ago?
Huh? Where?
In Miss Pringle's attic.
Oh. I'm driving, so how could it be?
Parked here the last 5 minutes. Did you see anybody in a hurry to quit the general neighborhood of Miss Pringle's?
No. I see nobody.
You're sure?
Are you trying to mix me up?
Nature got to you first. Just for future reference, what name do you answer to?
Harmony.
Harmony?
Yeah. You like it?
Back in the attic with the kerosene lamp lit and Miss Pringle in a trembling spasm, I took stock of the room.
Oh, what you've told me, Mr. Craig, it's unbelievable.
Believe it. I wasn't born with this rhinoceros egg on my head.
But what purpose could
I'm checking to see. This picture on the floor, where was it hanging originally? The kerosene lamp's throwing so many shadows I can't see the nail hole.
Why, it hung there over the highboy. The glass broke?
Yeah, it needs a new glass. The ship's print, huh?
Yes, the Princess Ida, an old whaling vessel.
The picture have any special meaning?
Special meaning?
A value, an heirloom or something?
Why, no value. I only paid a dollar, but... Oh, wait. Yes, come to think of it. I was offered a good price for it.
How good a price?
$100, if I recollect.
For a dollar print? Who made the offer?
The young Mr. Stanley, the one with the new antique shop out on North Rugby.
Why didn't you sell the picture to him?
Well, I'm not sure. For spite, I guess.
Spite?
Well, the young man was too persistent and bad-mannered. Calling me on the telephone and then tracking his muddy boots on my parlor rugs. But I don't understand why these questions.
Somebody was up here to steal the picture. I got in the way and was struck down.
But nobody stole the Princess Ida.
It was dropped in the commotion and the getaway. I heard breaking glass while rolling on the floor.
Oh, you're trying to frighten me.
Just enough to make you twice the cautious miss you already are. No men in your parlor. There's one joker abroad who might not respect that rule.
Oh, you're not alluding to the claw murderer.
Bolt your door and sleep with one eye open.
Oh,
I've just found you, beautiful, and I don't want to lose you.
Mr. Craig.
Yes, Miss Pringle.
There's a fine room on the first floor right next to mine.
Oh, no thanks. I'm getting to like the attic.
There's electricity and a wall out that you can shave.
Oh, really kind of you. But I'm looking forward to roughing it. It'll toughen me up.
Mr. Craig, I insist you move to the room downstairs next to mine.
Oh, this creeping infatuation for me. Fight it, Miss Pringle, to your last drop of blood. We could get to be the talk of Seneca.
I don't care, Mr. Craig. I'm frightened.
In the morning, I took breakfast with Town Supervisor Samuels. Breakfast and information.
I'm sorry, Sheriff. Berkey made you unwelcome.
Berkey's sensitive to competition.
I'm sorry about your injury.
My injury?
You were attacked and beaten last night.
How could you know?
Miss Pringle had me on the telephone in the middle of the night.
Oh. I want to know about a couple of your townspeople.
Eh?
First, a bright chap who calls himself Harmony.
Harmony? Now, what reason could you...
Never mind. I'm asking the question. Tell me about him.
Harmony's Big Toby Keller. Hires out for odd jobs. Spring plowing, window washing, garage work.
How about dirty work?
No. Craig, you're wrong about Harmony. I take an oath. His mind isn't the best. But we know him to be good-natured, honest.
Mm-hmm. What about a young Mr. Stanley?
Fred Stanley? He's a newcomer to Seneca.
What brought him here?
A lawyer got him to come in the first place. From Chicago, I think. Chicago. Fred Stanley came thinking he was a missing heir. Claim his grandfather's fortune.
But there was no fortune.
Only an old house just this side of the Seneca line. Not worth the taxes on it.
Why was there any idea of a fortune at all?
And the grandfather, old Mitchell Stanley, was said to be a rich miser who put no trust in banks. And when Mitch Stanley died, there wasn't a penny. They had to auction off his furniture to pay for his funeral.
But young Stanley stayed on in Seneca.
Yeah, opened an antique shop in the old Stanley house.
Can he make out in a one-horse town like this?
He has business signs posted on the highways, hoping to get the tourist trade. What's your interest in Fred Stanley?
He tried to buy a ship's print, the Princess Ida, from a girlfriend of mine, Miss Pringle. Stanley offered $100 for a picture worth $1. A liberal offer like that is...
Craig!
No, don't blow your gasket. It's only a parcel delivery through your closed window. Did you order this?
What is it?
A claw. A garden tool like the one used on Doc Tyler. And a note with it. It's addressed to me, Barry Craig. Get out of Seneca by 10 this morning or never.
Get out of Seneca by 10?
9. I've got an hour of grace.
Or never. Craig, it's a threat against your life.
I'll be planted in the country. A city fellow like me.
The handwriting.
No handwriting. The note was put together with newsprint. Can I borrow your car?
Yeah, of course.
Stanley's antique shop is on North Rugby Road, just this side of the Seneca line, you said.
It's a 3-mile drive up the incline to Widder's Ridge, then left a quarter mile. Craig, be careful. Please, I don't want your murder on my conscience.
Okay, I'll stay alive, but only for your sake, mind you. Staying alive is a deal that sometimes needs the cooperation of unknown parties, in my racket, anyhow. Climbing the steep incline to Widow's Ridge. Climbing maybe 300 feet into morning mists as thick as pea soup. I knew I wasn't going to get that kind of cooperation. A rifle shot that blew a tire into confetti. Crashed off the incline, had to come. Funny distortions in your eye when you first come to and start taking inventory to see if you're alive. A half-frozen robin who didn't have the sense to fly south for the winter. He sat on the side of the hill, 10 feet from where I lay, staring solemnly at me and chirping prayers for my safety. Oh,
When I started getting to my feet, the robin flew away. The inventory added up. I was all there in one piece, with a few dents that couldn't hurt forever. Samuel's car was down at the foot of the incline, topsy-turvy like it was playing dead dog. I'd been thrown clear of the wreck. Half my fee into the poor box. I took an oath on that as I started for Rugby Road on foot. Fred Stanley gave me the expected answer.
Just what do you find so unusual about my interest in buying old pictures, Mr. Craig?
$100 for a $1 picture doesn't make sense.
And why must it make sense?
It's a cold, practical world, chum. People generally don't go haywire with money. They conserve it.
Now look, Craig. I collect Americana. Whatever strikes my fancy, I buy. The cost is secondary.
But you're in business to buy cheap and sell at a profit.
Technically, yes, but it doesn't work out that way. I love buying and I hate selling. A profit is rare.
That gets expensive. Where does the money come from?
That's none of your business, Craig. Now, if you don't mind, I'll terminate this interview.
I'm in no hurry.
Now, look here, Craig.
And I'm in no mood for the polite, formal approach, Stanley. Or the kind of weasel talk you've been giving me. Or being terminated.
Are you insane?
I walked away from my own murder 20 minutes ago. I came to this whistle stop against my will to do a big, good deed. And go home. I don't intend to settle here for keeps.
But what has that got to do...
You lied to me. A fancy, eccentric pose that's as phony as I am bought of an Icon Shemokin. The ship print signifies something more than just another antique. No polite, formal approach, Stanley. I'm going to pound the truth out of
you. You're crazy! Let me go!
Tell me about the Princess Ida ship print.
Let go! Harmony! Harmony, help!
Harmony, huh? Now we're making headway. So King Kong's hired out to you.
Harmony, help!
I want you to let Stanley go.
Oh. Strapping ape like you, Harmony, you don't need a gun to take charge.
I want you to let Stanley go.
Sure, I'll let Stanley go. He's only fixing his tie.
Oh, Craig, you had no right to manhandle me, no right.
It paid off. I got to find out who was providing Harmony with his raw meat.
Harmony's with me on day hire. To do general cleaning and polishing, scrape down old furniture.
Plus prowl in attics, plus distribute garden tools shaped like claws all over town. Let's take rival shots at passing cars.
You're out of your mind. You assaulted me and Harmony rescued me. Now get out of here.
Sure. But I'll be back. I'll be back, Stanley. The minute I tumble to your motive. Back at Miss Pringle's to wash up and change my suit for a whole one, I found her prized parlor rug a mess. Spots all over it. And the dog Fluff, suddenly cured of laryngitis and barking. Warm spots with a sticky feeling to the hand. Red like blood. Blood tracked in by Fluff from somewhere. I followed the tracks to Miss Pringle's bedroom. Blood was Miss Pringle's goodbye to spinsterhood. The garden tool, shaped like a claw, lay beside her on the floor like a third hand. Town Supervisor Samuels, aged 20 years and 20 seconds.
Craig, it's ghastly, ghastly.
We'll skip the rhetoric. Miss Pringle was murdered by someone who made off with the Princess Ida.
You know that?
The picture is gone. I searched high and low.
The murder then clears Stanley and Harmony of any suspicion?
No.
But you saw them
Miss
both.
Pringle could have been murdered earlier, while I was here, breakfasting with you. The Princess Ida and old Baldy. Two murders for two worthless relics.
You're convinced these relics motivated the atrocities?
It figures. The relics and somebody's lust to kill for its own sake. We're dealing with a nut to boot. Do the articles have any history?
History?
A story, some legend they figure in, say.
No, nothing I know, Craig.
Some background that could tell us why two hunks of junk produced two killings.
I'm sorry.
Is there anybody in Seneca who could know? A village librarian or a local historian?
You could ask Will Briggs. Will used to be our recorder until the town board voted to abolish the job.
Will Briggs?
Will's crotchety, bad-tempered. I don't think he'll be disposed to help you, even if he could.
Even in a town crisis like this?
Well, Briggs don't feel very civic about Seneca and its problems. Since we abolished his job for economy reasons, Will's been feuding. Suing in the courts for pension, making a rumpus at town hall meetings.
Great cooperative little town you've got here. Great job you roped me into. But Will Briggs pulled a switch on Samuel's characterization of him. Briggs fell all over himself cooperating.
$20, Mr. Craig. I'm a man without funds.
$20, okay. You'll get it.
Black-hearted Board of Supervisors.
Did you dirt? Old Baldy and the Princess Ida. Scratch your memory.
Old Baldy and the Princess Ida. Funny now, you should be asking about them.
Why is it funny?
You're the second party that's come to me asking.
Who came first?
Old Mitchell Stanley's grandson. The one who settled himself into a shop here a spell ago. Young Fred Stanley.
What did you tell him?
What I'll tell you. If you wait. I have the record here. Yes, here it is. The sales sheet, my own writing, for that auction they held at Mitchell Stanley's once, to raise money for burying him. I was cracking for the auctioneer that day.
Get to it, please.
My time. See? It says here we sold beds and tables and floor coverings. Down here it says Old Baldy. 50 cents. Sold to Dr. Tyler. Princess Ida. $1. Sold to Miss Pringle. And the snowman sold for 75 cents.
What's the snowman?
A design on a patchwork quilt it's named for.
Who bought it?
Let me see. Sold to Adam Samuels, it says. That's the town supervisor himself.
Where's your telephone, Briggs?
Telephone? Ain't never invented it from its use to me. Keeping body and soul together as it is.
Briggs, don't bend my ears.
Let's cut your back up.
Samuels, your town supervisor's number 3 on the claw murderer's list.
If it's so, I say good riddance to the black-hearted...
Good riddance or bad, someone else would have to judge Samuel's merits as a human on Earth. The garden tool shaped as a claw lay across the room where it had been thrown. A claw with bright red fingers. Fred Stanley resisted arrest to the last gasp. Harmony's last gasp, that is.
Craig, get out of here.
You're under arrest, Stanley.
You have no authority.
I've got a gun.
Harmony!
That ape man comes through the door and he's dead.
Harmony!
You're asking your moronic stooge to commit suicide?
We'll see. Harmony!
One down, and Seneca's a better place for it.
You killed him.
He's only wounded. Where do you want it, Stanley?
I'll go with you.
Stanley put his confession on record after a little workout and a lot of sweating.
I found a diary that once belonged to my grandfather, Mitchell Stanley. A diary hidden behind the oak paneling over a fireplace. In the diary, 3 pieces of a map were mentioned.
A piece each hidden in Old Baldy, the Princess Ida, and the Snowman, huh?
Yes. A treasure map. The 3 pieces were to fit together into a treasure map. Through them, I'd find the wealth my grandfather was reputed to have. The wealth that never turned up when he died.
Insanity runs in the Stanley line, huh?
My grandfather's whole genius was a genius for hiding and hoarding. Hiding from the world in that awful house at the edge of the town line. Hoarding his gold. Fantastic thing like a child's treasure map was well in character with my grandfather. The shabby trick, too, was well in character with my grandfather.
What does that mean?
Well, it was all a grotesque joke. My grandfather's ghoulish sense of humor. I killed 3 people for a load of junk. There weren't any pieces of map in Old Baldy. Or the Princess Ida, or the snowman.
That diary, Stanley. Give it to me.
Here, go hunt yourself up some treasure, Craig.
was an anticlimax to the Stanley story. In a village beanery, with the sometime Sheriff Berkey trying to act apologetic and yet keep his dignity.
I suppose you'll be leaving now, Craig, eh?
Yeah, I can't wait to stand on Broadway and flip a cigarette into the gutter.
I've been a jealous fool.
So would I be, in your shoes.
Oh, thanks. Will Briggs is coming over to see you. He says you owe him something.
Yeah. $20 for valuable services rendered.
Okay.
Briggs.
It's not out of order now.
To dun me for $20? Here you are.
Thank you. When we go.
Stick around a minute, Briggs. I want to go over that feud you had with the town board.
I'm over it now.
Now with the town board extinct. Now that the murders of Doc Tyler, Miss Pringle, and Samuels have left Seneca without a town board.
I'm not one to pillory the dead.
But I'm one to pillory the living. Here's that alleged Mitchell Stanley diary that produced 3 murders.
Is it now?
And this is that auction sales sheet in your own handwriting, as you told me. Do I have to tell you that the handwriting in both is the same, even down to the green ink?
Greg, what are you getting at with Briggs?
That Briggs here forged the diary, Sheriff, and planted it where young Stanley would be sure to find it. That Stanley killed 3 people Briggs hated, while Briggs sat back and enjoyed the show. That young Stanley was only a dupe, a tool used for revenge. Make the arrest, Sheriff. And then flag down a train so I can scram out of this whistle stop. The sweet neighborliness around here is just killing me. Good night, folks. See you next week.
You have been listening to William Gargan in another exciting transcribed mystery drama from the adventures of Barry Craig, confidential investigator. Tonight's story, Diary of Death, was written by John Robert. Next week, it's the strange story titled A Time to Kill, about which Barry Craig has this to say.
Next week, I have a wow of a time in the kindergarten when a whimsical corpse insists on playing hide and go seek. See you next week, folks.
Featured in the role of Samuels was Louis Van Ruten. Barry Craig, starring William Gargan, was under the direction of Hyman Brown. This is Don Pardo speaking. Next, Robert Montgomery presents something different than news analysis on NBC.